Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Today, we're exploring a really fascinating period and place. Afrin, also known historically as Kurdah, during the French Mandate in Syria. So roughly 1920 through to 1946.
Yes, and the material we're looking at gives such a detailed picture of how this largely Kurdish region, right up there in northwestern Syria, bordering Turkey, how it was run, how society worked, and, well, the key political moments that really shaped its identity back then.
It was a time of huge change, wasn't it? The Ottoman Empire collapsing, French rule coming in.
Absolutely. Massive geopolitical shifts.
So our aim today is to unpack the complexities of Afrin under the French. We want to look at its unique administrative situation, the impact French policies had, the, you know, the socioeconomic reality for people there.
And the demographic changes too, the population shifts, and also the different kinds of Kurdish political expression that emerged. We see everything from armed resistance right through to demands for more autonomy.
And we can't forget its position right on the border. That relationship with the central mandate authorities, but also with Turkey next door, is crucial.
Definitely. It's a very delicate position.
Okay, so let's set the scene a bit more. Time frame and location.
Sure. So the mandate officially, you could say, runs 1923 to 46. But French control, boots on the ground in Syria, including Afrin, that really starts after the Battle of Maysalun, July 1920.
Right. And Afrin itself, Kurdah, Kurd Mountain, it's in that northwestern corner of Syria, part of Aleppo Governorate, defined by the Kurd Mountains, the Afrin River Valley.
And historically, it's interesting, it was part of the Ottoman Kilis province, the Sancak of the Kurds. So its geography and its population makeup already made it pretty significant before the French even arrived.
That makes sense.
And then you get these international treaties, the Treaty of Ankara in 21, Lausanne in 23. They draw the Turkish-Syrian border.
And that cuts Kilis off from Kurdah, its southern hinterland, right?
Exactly. A major disruption. And then add to that, in 1939, Turkey annexes the Sanjak of Alexandretta, becomes Hatay.
Which basically leaves Afrin surrounded by Turkish territory on the north and west.
Pretty much. So you can see how it instantly becomes this really sensitive, strategically vital border zone.
Absolutely. Okay, let's turn to how it was administered then, under the French. You said initially it was part of the state of Aleppo.
That's right. Established in 1920, but it went through a few changes in those early years. Briefly part of the Syrian Federation, 22 to 25 maybe.
Okay.
Then that merged into the Unified State of Syria, 25 to 30, which then became the Mandatory Syrian Republic from 1930. So, you know, the wider structure kept evolving.
And the administrative center moving from Aleppo down to Damascus. I wonder how that affected Afrin's sort of political alignment or just the feeling of governance. Did it feel more distant?
It must have added complexity, for sure. But a really crucial step, one that directly acknowledged the region's character, was in November 1921. The French created a separate administrative district, Akada, specifically called Kurdah.
Akada of Kurdak. So a formal recognition of the Kurdish majority and the Kurmanji dialect spoken there.
Precisely. It was significant. Right. This Kada, initially, it covered something like 370 villages, divided into four sub-districts, Rajo, Katma, or Kitme Bulbul, and Jum, which is also Kume.
And the actual administrative center, the main town for the Kada, that moved around too.
It did. Started in Kitme, then Maidanki, later Mabatli Mabeda. And all the while, Afrin town itself was sort of slowly growing in importance as a center.
Interesting. What about official languages in this Kada?
Well, Turkish and Arabic were designated official languages, which, you know, probably reflects its border position, the existing ties, maybe French awareness of Turkish influence nearby.
And this wasn't just a top-down French decision. Local leaders were involved.
Yeah, that's important. The sources suggest it was partly a response to demands from local Kurdish figures like Korish Aga. So there was some local agency in shaping this administrative setup.
Okay, let's move on to the French policies themselves and how local governance actually worked on the ground. The big picture is the French High Commissioner in Beirut had the ultimate authority, right?
Absolutely. Supreme authority. And the local administrations, like the Kurdah Kata, they operated under really close French supervision. They had French delegates, advisors, keeping a tight rein.
So creating the Kata itself was a policy, recognizing the Kurdish identity, but firmly within a French system.
Yes. And those linguistic concessions, allowing Turkish and Arabic, probably a calculated move. Encourage cooperation, maybe differentiate the Kurds from the wider Syrian Arab nationalist cause that was emerging.
And this is where we see that classic divide and rule strategy, isn't it? Setting up these ethno-sectarian units, Kurd Dag, but also areas for Alawites, for Druze.
Exactly. The idea was to prevent a unified Syrian nationalism from challenging French control. France could then position itself as, you know, the protector of these minorities.
And that ties into recruitment too, doesn't it? Recruiting Kurds into the Troupes Speciales du Levant.
Precisely. Those local auxiliary forces under French command, it served multiple purposes for the French.
They also seem to focus on co-opting local elites, making alliances with influential agas like the Quraysh Aga you mentioned.
Yes, giving them influence, patronage, in return for keeping order locally. But, I mean, that obviously reinforced the existing social hierarchies. It created resentment among those left out.
And what about managing the population? Demographic policies?
Well, the main focus for settling Kurdish refugees coming from Turkey was the Jazeera region over in the northeast. But the French did facilitate the settlement, gave citizenship, part of a bigger plan to boost the non-Arab population in Syria.
So even if Jazeera was the main area, it seems likely Afrin, being a border region, would have seen some of that influx too.
Highly probable, yes. Which would only have strengthened its Kurdish character further.
And then there's the security side, pacification.
Right. French troops deployed, resistance was suppressed, those early Chiche bins, and later the Murud movement we'll likely talk about. There are reports of aerial bombardment being used.
Really? Aerial bombardment.
That's what some sources suggest, yes. And they repaired infrastructure, roads, maybe bridges, but often the primary reason was to move troops more easily, maintain control.
Okay. And the economy. We see Afrin Town developing as a market center.
It did develop, yes. But it's always worth remembering that the wider mandate economic policies often, you know, put French interests first.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Roj Bosh Hannah.
Roj Bosh Hannah. Ah, lovely. Is that a hint of cardamom I smell today, Hannah? It smells wonderful.
It does smell good. Not too bitter today. Looks perfectly steeped. Maybe needs just a touch of sugar for me, but all this is great. Thank you, Hannah. Roj Bosh.
Roj Bosh. Okay, let's just take a moment for this chai.
Perfect. When we come back, let's dive into the role of those local leaders we touched upon, the agas, the sheikhs, the resistance figures. Implied short break. All right, welcome back. We were just enjoying that excellent chai. So, local leaders in Afrin during the mandate. It's clear that even before the French, you had powerful figures, the tribal agas, the big landowners, and Sufi sheikhs too.
Definitely. And what's really striking is how differently they responded to French rule. We mentioned Kurdish Adaga. He's a prime example of an aga who chose to collaborate. Why? Well, likely to keep his local power, maybe even enhance it under the new system.
But not everyone collaborated. There was significant armed resistance too. Leaders of these chit bands, figures like Meho Evshashe, Tikbikli Haji, Emede Rute, Seyde Dike.
Yes, fighting against French control, often it seems, with some support from Turkish nationalists just across the border. And later on, a major figure is Sheikh Ibrahim Khalil, who led the Murud movement.
The Murud movement? It sounds particularly important. It wasn't just anti-French, was it?
No, not at all. That's what makes it so interesting. It was also, fundamentally, a social revolt against the Aga class, especially those seen as collaborators with the French. It was challenging their economic grip, their social dominance, driven by peasant grievances.
So internal Kurdish conflict mixed in with the anti-colonial struggle.
Exactly. And then, separate from armed struggle or collaboration, you start seeing more formal political activity emerging.
Like Nuri Kandi's petition in 1924, asking for Kurdish administrative autonomy.
Precisely. An early sign. And later, the influence of the Abun organization, that key Kurdish nationalist group, founded in 27. They even got a member, Hassan Ouni, elected as a deputy for a short time in the early 30s.
Which shows, you know, a growing political consciousness, trying to work within the system, however limited it was.
So it's a real mix. Collaboration, resistance, internal conflict, early formal politics. A very dynamic leadership scene responding to immense pressure.
Okay, let's shift to socioeconomic conditions. Land ownership seems key, dominated by the agas.
Yes, creating that inequality that fueled things like the Murid movement. And the border itself caused problems. Some landowners and Kilis were suddenly cut off from their estates in Afrin. Real headache for some.
And agriculture was the bedrock, olives especially.
Oh, absolutely. Afrin was famous for its olive groves, olive oil production. Hugely important for Aleppo's soap industry, for instance. That economic link to Aleppo was vital even much later, before 2011.
But the sources don't detail specific French policies on olives.
Not in great detail, no. But we do know Afrin town grew as a market center. The Baghdad Railway passed nearby. Roads were developed, facilitating transport and trade with Aleppo.
And the border, while disrupting old Kilis trade, probably created a new kind of frontier economy. Yeah. Smuggling, maybe?
Very likely, yes. A porous border often leads to that. And, of course, you have the backdrop of bigger economic events, the Great Depression, World War II, which would have impacted Afrin, like everywhere else.
Right. Okay, what about the people themselves, the demographic makeup? Predominantly Kurdish, speaking Kurmanji.
Overwhelmingly. That Kurdish identity was historically recognized. But there were other groups too, Yazidi communities, mainly in the south near Jebel Semen, some Alevi communities as well.
And mostly Sunni Muslim Kurds.
A majority, yes.
Yeah.
Getting exact population numbers for the Qadha back then is tough. We know Afrin town was small, maybe 800 people in 1929, but grew significantly later. The whole of Syria under the mandate was maybe 2.5 to 3.5 million people.
A key factor must be the migration of Kurds from Turkey into Syria in the 20s and 30s.
Hugely significant. This was driven by repression in Turkey after the Kurdish uprisings, Sheikh Zayed Ararat. Thousands fled, maybe around 25,000 estimated, came into Syria.
And the French encouraged this.
They did, yes. Yeah. As we mentioned, mainly directing them to Jazeera, but Afrin, as a border area, almost certainly received some of these refugees. It reinforced the Kurdishness of the region and maybe even fostered a kind of broader pan-Kurdish feeling.
Which brings us to the major political events, resistance, conflicts. We touched on the early Chechen bands fighting the French, sometimes with Turkish backing.
Right, and the French response, military force, but also co-opting those agos we discussed. Then came the more organized political demands, Nuri Kandi's petition, the rise of Zoybun.
Hassan Sayuni's election.
Exactly, showing that shift towards more formal political mobilization alongside the ongoing potential for resistance.
And then the Murid movement really kicks off in the mid-1930s, led by Sheikh Ibrahim Khalil.
Yes, that complex socio-political revolt, anti-French, but also anti-Aga, particularly targeting families like the Sheikh Ismail Zada, fueled by peasant discontent. There were suspicions of Turkish support again.
And the French response was harsh.
Very forceful suppression, military clashes, the reported aerial attacks. It caused significant destruction. People were displaced. Interestingly, some argue it actually led to a kind of forced modernity by weakening the traditional tribal structures.
A real challenge to that old Aga power base.
Definitely. It shook things up considerably.
So finally, let's just tie together Afrin's relationships with the central French authorities and with Turkey. The relationship with the French seems clear. Hierarchical. Control, suppression, co-option.
And the Kurdish responses varied wildly. From working with them, to fighting them, to trying political routes.
What are relations with the Syrian nationalist movement?
Complicated. That French divide and rule policy often put them at odds. There might have been temporary alliances against the French, like maybe some overlap between the Murid movement and the National Bloc. But long-term tensions existed, especially around Arabization policies later on. Still, those strong economic and administrative ties to Aleppo remained.
And Turkey. The border is the defining thing, dividing Kurd dog.
Absolutely. And Turkey's suspected role in backing resistance, the porous border, the refugees flowing from Turkey, it all paints Afrin or Kurd dog as this contested borderland, pulled between French, Syrian Arab nationalist, and Turkish interests.
And the Hatay annexation in 39 just intensified that whole situation.
Made it even more precarious, yes. Surrounded on two sides.
So wrapping this up, it's clear this French mandate period was absolutely pivotal for Afrin. It really forged a distinct regional identity amidst all these competing pressures. Imperial, nationalist, local.
Definitely. The administrative choices, the social conflicts like the Murid movement, the constant shadow of Turkey, it all left a really deep mark on the region, on its people.
The sources really bring out the sheer complexity of it all. A society trying to navigate colonial rule, internal power dynamics, new borders being drawn on the map. You can still feel the echoes of that time today.
We really hope this exploration has given everyone a valuable insight into this crucial period in Afrin's history. It really highlights that complex dance between local actions and much bigger external forces.
Absolutely. Does anything particularly stand out to you looking back over this period, or what questions does it raise about the longer-term impacts about how Kurdish identity was shaped there?
It's such a rich history, isn't it? Lots to think about regarding the legacy of mandate, borders, and policies, the internal social dynamics. We definitely encourage everyone listening to keep exploring these themes.
Thank you for joining us on the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.